Chapter 44. A Fox and a Deer. Tigu stalked along the property of her master, inspecting it for any traces of interlopers. It was a thankless task, but one infinitely more exciting than whatever the master was currently working on. Really, watching ice melt? It was surely for some profound reason, and she would praise him and allow him to pet her when he figured it out, but such things were beneath her. She had a patrol to maintain. She had to train her body. She consented to learning the strange numbers the master taught, but sitting there was boring. She was a creature of action. She would find her master's enemies and slay them. But today, there were no enemies. What had once been a near constant skirmish against a tide of verminous filth had died down dramatically ever since she had slain the bandits. Bidi had said that a curse had been cleansed from the land after they defeated Sun Ken. The master destroying it was a sign that he considered her powerful enough for her to not need the swarm of training aids, but now there was nothing. There was nothing to hunt. There was nothing to prey upon. She wasn't allowed to eat the glutton. She could peel back his armored and surprisingly thick scales anytime she liked, but the master had forbidden her from eating those with the spark. None of the others would trade pointers with her. Bidi was, well, he was, a powerful existence that currently surpassed her. She would beat him eventually, but constantly running her face into a wall was stupid. Rizu fled from her and was unavailable. Washi would sit in his river and spit water at her, the gluttonous bastard. Chung Ki just thought it was a game, cheerily charging after her. That was enjoyable enough, but she had tried to truly trade pointers and turn it into a proper spar once. Once. The fight had stopped as soon as it started when she brought out her fivefold blades. Sister Pipa's wrath had been magnificent. She was truly a most powerful brute. Lady. Pipa was a lady. Tigu would respect her and call her that. Being swallowed was a decidedly unpleasant experience, even if she had managed to fight her way out. It had been quite a good workout, until the preening cock had put a stop to her fun. Now Pipa spent her time glaring and avoiding Tigu while the master was away. A pity that they were so intimidated by her might. It's not like she wanted to play with them or anything. Tigu sighed with boredom. She didn't even have the master's training aid. Her claws had finally defeated it 2 days ago, and though the master had promised her another, it was not ready for her yet. She wished she still had it. She wished for strength. Growing in strength was only right. Eating meat was only proper, no matter how much Chung Ki wailed and blubbered, the oaf. She frowned as she thought about the master's story again, his tale of why he came here. Why did the master content himself with this? He could rule this world with ease, she was sure of it. His strength was beyond every other man. Contenting himself with only the land around him, it was just so strange. You may go if you wish, but you will always have a place here. She could go off on an adventure. She could just step out for a few days, find some beast and slay it, go on one of these adventures. She shook her head and pushed those thoughts from her mind. No, she could not. She could not do that. The master needed her here. She was the most reliable. She was the most comforting. She was the one who understood him the most. Even if she didn't understand why he said he had given up power. It was surely a ruse, wasn't it? She stared at the boundary between the land and the outside. She shook her head, then turned around. Maybe next time. Maybe she would expand the master's territory. Yes, next time she went out, she would go and conquer in his name. She turned and began to head back to the master. She would allow him to pat her again for deciding to expand his land. Yes, that was what she would do. Though she wondered what that thundering sound was. She approached swiftly, only to see the master assaulting the frozen ground furiously while Washi looked on and slapped his fins on the bank of the river. That was a big hole he was digging. Chung Ki had climbed in after him and was using his tusks and nose to aid the master's quest. Was it some sort of training? She supposed cutting through the hardened soil might prove some challenge, and it was better than working on the infernal numbers. Tigu hopped into the hole. The earth could not withstand the might of her blades. When I'd first left for the Azure Hills, I had planned to be a hermit. I had planned to do everything myself and visit the least amount of people possible. If I hadn't been a cultivator, that plan likely would have killed me. But then again, if I hadn't been a cultivator, I probably wouldn't have decided to go full pioneer in the first place. There were too many things that could go wrong. But to hell with that mindset. This may have been Xianxia land, but that didn't mean everybody was a shithead, going for the backstabs and the betrayal like in my old sect. I had friends. I had a soon-to-be family. Even Sholan was pretty cool, and she was a cultivator. The point was, I had people who would help, and that made everything worth it. I needed to get a move on if I wanted to have the house done in time for Meimei's arrival. The days were getting warmer. I had spent a lot of precious time digging a giant pit to store ice. Like, a lot of ice. The frozen ground didn't do much to stop me from carving out a nice big underground storage area. Honestly, it was mostly born out of frustration with the fact that my ice experiments weren't going that well. The several tons of ice now sitting pretty in their bunker was me finally snapping. In other words, I had been procrastinating on finishing up my house because I had my attention captured by a dumb project, one I had borked up. By the time I realized how much work I had put into it, I had stripped an entire small lake of its ice. It was good stress relief, though. Tigger was really good at cutting it into perfect blocks. And making ice sculptures once I showed her how. Though I didn't really know how to feel about the life-sized replica of me standing triumphantly atop a pile of defeated enemies. They all had their quirks, I suppose. And really, it was a fantastic sculpture. She had even managed to make it look like I had beads of sweat rolling down my bare chest. I guess I should probably encourage it. It was art. She had a hobby. My feet plodded along the melty path back home from Verdant Hill. The magistrate had sent me a letter telling me my glass had arrived, just in time for me to be able to finish my house before the wedding. This was the last step. The Song brothers had offered their help, and I would be taking them up on it. I could probably do it all myself, but the question was, why? Having help would cost me a bit of food, and I got some extra hands and some company. It was always a pain in the ass installing windows and sanding floors. That stuff was boring as hell, even when you could do it as fast as I could. Many hands make light work, after all. The brothers were out in the woods when I called on them, so their mother invited me in to wait. They still lived with their parents. Most people here did, with multiple generations living in the same house. Honestly, it was pretty nice. I was never a fan of the out-at-18 mindset a lot of people had in the before. The matriarch of the Song family, Nuzin Ho Li, was appropriately named, Ho Li being the word for fox. I could tell where Yun Zhen got his looks from. She had the same fox-like eyes as her son, surrounded by laugh lines.
"Please, make yourself at home, Master Jin," she said demurely as she brewed us some tea. "You've aided this Ho Li's sons greatly, and she would like to thank you for it."
"Please, just Jin. I'm good friends with Yun Zhen and Go Zhen. There's no need for you to be so formal with me," I told her, and took a sip of tea.
"Well, if that's what you want, then it's all good, yeah?"
I nearly spat out my tea at the swap from a formal, demure host to whatever the hell her accent was. She sounded almost like she was from Brooklyn. Let me tell you, that coming out from a little Asian lady was hilarious. Her grin was so wide it split her face in two as she saw my amused look. "Where's that from?" I asked.
"A remnant of my tribe," she said, without the accent. "A week's journey north through the forest."
She swapped back.
"So you grabbing one of my brats for the summer?"
I chuckled. "Yeah, Go Zhen is going to be helping me and learning about how to grow rice like I do it. Should improve yields here by a lot, but it's also quite a bit more work." She nodded.
"My boy likes to complain, but he always does good work. Take care of him, you hear?"
I nodded. "Go's a good friend, and you're welcome to come visit whenever you want." She smiled again.
"I might just take you up on that. Little May will need a woman to talk to in any case. There are some things men just can't handle," she said authoritatively.
I nodded. She would be better at handling the womanly issues Meimei might need help with. If Mei Ling wanted to include me in that kind of stuff, I was absolutely fine with helping, but if she wasn't, that was her choice. She seemed a little shocked at my easy surrender, her vulpine eyes opening completely. They were a lovely amber color, the same as both her sons.
As quickly as the shock had come, it left. "So how did you and your husband meet anyways?" I asked.
"Oh, Tanjin got hurt in the forest and I found him. He thought I was some kind of fox spirit at first, and I thought he was some kind of ascended monkey. He shaves them off now, but back then his sideburns. Well, I nursed him back to health, and he ended up challenging my father to a hunting contest to win my hand."
I listened to the rather funny story of Tanjin's increasingly mad ploys to win the hand of a tribal girl. Finally, he just snuck in the middle of the night and kidnapped her, which was apparently what both she and her father had been waiting for, judging by the fond sighs and blush she got when relaying that piece of information. All right, that's a piece of culture shock, but judging by the story, it was consensual, so I'm not gonna judge.
"And then my uncle looked right at him. Tanjin always says he got away cleanly, but don't believe a word," she told me conspiratorially.
"I swear the wood is faulty. It split right down the middle again,"
I heard Yunjin's raised voice exclaim from outside.
"My bow wasn't faulty. Say that again and I'll beat your teeth into the back of your skull. It's something else. That thing is cursed, I tell you. Cursed!"
The brothers entered, looking quite upset, while Hu Li narrowed her eyes.
"And what are you two grumbling about now? Yunjin's mystery deer?" she demanded.
Both boys jumped.
"Mother!"
Yunjin yelped.
"Jin?"
Gojin called. Hu Li glared at her sons.
"It wasn't even an hour from the village,"
Yunjin protested.
"It had torn up a bunch of snow to get it a patch of still green grass. I tried to get it, and Go's bow broke."
Gojin grumbled. Hu Li frowned and raised an eyebrow at Gojin.
"So it's real then, and not a tall story?"
Her younger son nodded.
"I don't think it's a spirit beast. It looks too dumb. Here, let me show you. Yunjin can't draw worth a damn, and you told me to get what it looked like."
"I can draw just fine,"
his brother muttered, while Gojin got a piece of charcoal and started drawing on the table. My first thought when the drawing was done was, Gojin is really good at making things look cute. The second was, that's a goddamn moose. Well, if there are sugar maple trees. Hu Li looked a bit confused.
"A thunderhoof? This far south?"
"Hey, that's kinda cute. Nice drawing, Go," I said, looking at the little picture. "Look at those doe eyes." He blushed.
"How could you mistake a moose for a deer, Yunjin?"
"Yeah, the babies are cute. You won't be saying that when it grows up bigger than the headman's house,"
Hu Li shot back. "Okay, what?" "And they're not spirit beasts," I asked incredulously.
"Some of them are. Mostly, they're just big. They live up in the northern wastes, out in the sea of snow. This one is real lost to be this far south."
"What the hell, Shansha Land? Do you want me to chase it off?" I finally asked. She shook her head.
"It'll clear off on its own, and it won't hurt us none as long as we don't poke it with arrows," she snarled, glaring at her sons.
They had the grace to look embarrassed.
"They're good fortune anyways. It'll stay for a while, then head back to the wastes."
She shook her head.
"Now, you came here for my boys. Take them before they cause any more trouble,"
she demanded, shooing us out of their house. Both of her sons started whining about needing a change of clothes, and she relented. She leaned against the wall of their house as we packed up.
"You know, sometimes the tribe's hunters are around the area where you live. I'll pass the word on that you're open for business, if you want some things from further up."
"Just tell them to enter through the gate. Big D and Tigger don't take kindly to trespassers," I warned.
"Especially if those trespassers were carrying weapons."
"I'll tell them, don't you worry. I'd tell you to take good care of little May, but I don't think you need to be told to do that."
I nodded.
"Well, take care now, and don't be afraid to tan their hides if they muck up,"
Hu Li said with a wave.
"Really? Trying to hunt a thunderhoof,"
she muttered. I resisted the urge to go running off and find the baby moose. I had a job to do. The house had to get done.
Maybe I can see if I can find it after I finish.
Anyways, we hadn't spent long packing up before we were approached by Mei Mei, Yao Che, and Xian the Elder.
"What are you boys up to?" Che asked leadingly.
"They're going to help me with my house. Gotta get the windows in and the floors done, so I asked for a hand."
"Oh, glasswork,"
Che remarked, not sounding surprised at all.
"Don't leave it to these two miscreants if you want a fine touch. I've little to do right now, and I want to see what these brats have been squawking about."
Hong Xian nodded.
I would say you're home as well, he asked politely. Well, the more the merrier. I shrugged. Hop in, I said, banging the side of my cart. We'll be there in a couple hours at my pace. Maymay, you coming too? Maymay looked like she wanted to, but had a silent conversation with her father. He shook his head slightly, and she nodded.
I'll stay here this time, she decided. Let some things be a surprise.
Well, it wasn't too long till we were married. I scratched Rizzo's head and nodded at Maymay. Well, I'll see you soon then. The rest of the men seemed to be busy with the cart, so I darted in and kissed her on the forehead. She giggled and swatted me away. There was a bit of a nervous flutter in my stomach, as I would be showing my father-in-law around my house for the first time. He would like it. I knew he would like it. I picked up the cart once they were all settled in and started running.